Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for Friday, October 5th, 2012. I'm your host, Greg Luca, and I'm joined by three Alligator writers who are happy to be back. We have Josh Jarnavoy.
I am glad to be back. You stole my line.
We have Adam Pincus.
This is my first time. Hopefully it'll be memorable.
And everything Pincus does for the first time is memorable. And Joe Morgan.
Hello.
That's all you got. Okay.
Yeah.
So we've been away for a while, obviously. I had some technical difficulties with the laptop here, and then the other option, once I got it back, was to be coughing through the show the whole time, so it was kind of easier to just wait. And I guess this is as good a time as any, because Florida's actually 4-0, and a lot of things have happened. But before we get into the football stuff, Joe wants to do a five-second movie review, which was going to become a weekly tradition before Joe's only been on the show once. So, go ahead.
All right, it's going to be Moneyball. You ready?
Yeah.
Simple, satisfying, baseball.
It's three words. Okay.
That's great.
The listeners are going to appreciate that.
Yeah, you know.
Okay, so Florida football, 4-0. They beat Bowling Green. They won at Texas A&M. They won at Tennessee, and they beat Kentucky. So I guess the simple question right off the bat is, are you guys believers? Josh, start us off.
Wow, it's a big one. I'd say I definitely am a believer in the fact that they are better than they were last year. I think they've shown enough to prove that. I wouldn't say I'm a believer as far as – it depends what your definition of believer is. I'd say they are better than they were last year. I believe that. I don't know if I'm ready to say this team is a national championship contender. I think they can contend to win the SEC East. So maybe they can prove me wrong going forward if they can be dominant against some of these better teams when they get, that are going to be on their schedule going forward. But as of now, I think the second half against Tennessee was pretty impressive. I don't really take much from that Kentucky game. Second half against Texas A&M was impressive. And the Bowling Green game just wasn't very good. I don't think they've done enough to necessarily say they're any more than SEC East contenders, though.
I think it's you're the only one that had them in 9 wins, so what are you thinking at this point?
Well, I think I felt from the beginning of the year that this team's going in the right direction. What I'm really most interested in is not so much what happens Saturday, but how is the state of this team come November 1st after they played the LSU? You know, you have the Vandy game in there, but also you know, Georgia and South Carolina, two other top 10 teams. You know, is this team healthy? You know, what if they lose Saturday against LSU? Do they go on, you know, an October swoon like they did last season? That's the big question.
The only time I've been thoroughly impressed with Florida this year and what they've actually done is the second half against Tennessee. They just kind of stomped all over the Volunteers. But what I'm impressed with is how they've done it. They've, you know, that, I mean, it hasn't been pretty, and, you know, Muschamp's kind of been drumming the whole win ugly mantra, and but they've been doing it.
I mean, I think for me, I can break it down into there's reasons to believe and then there's obviously reasons not to believe. So we'll start with the positive. For me, it's that right now Driscoll looks actually like he's a good quarterback. And even through the competition and everything, I don't think anybody knew what to expect from either guy. But just through 4 games, averaging 175 yards a game, 69.6% completions, 4 touchdowns and only 1 interception. Maybe it's getting a little out of hand. I know against Kentucky he had a few overthrows and some misreads. It didn't look perfect, but overall, do you guys think he's good enough to lead a top-10 team?
I think he's good enough to quarterback a top-10 team. He doesn't necessarily have to lead them. I think Florida is going to ride its running game and their ability to control the line of scrimmage, which is actually where I wrote up my column about this week. I feel like Driscoll, when limited and managing the game, can do just fine, especially if Florida plans to make a habit of this top-10 thing.
But if they wanted to air it out, you don't think that would work with him?
I mean, we don't know. I mean,
no. One of the points that I think I've written about a lot this year is that, they don't necessarily need to lean on him. They're not going to necessarily rely on him. I don't think they should against LSU, but I think that he is good enough. If they need a big throw every once in a while, he can come up with that. I think he showed that with some of the throws he made against Tennessee. Like you said, he wasn't perfect against Kentucky. I wouldn't want him throwing as really 30-something times a game, but I think, like you said, he can manage the game, but he can do slightly more than that, in my opinion. A game manager, I think, implies that you really don't want him to do anything besides dump off passes and hand it off to a running back. I think he's capable of making bigger throws downfield when needed to, but shouldn't be asked to do that all game.
Well, here's the deal. You know, the LSUs, the Alabamas, they all do what Florida does, but much better. And in order for Florida to have a chance against these teams, they got to, you know, Driscoll has to make, you know, certain plays at the end of games. He has to make plays that, a game manager wouldn't normally make. You know, sometimes you do have to go down the field. You know, how can Florida get an advantage on LSU and Alabama? And that's by, you know, Jeff Driscoll, you know, when he has a wide open receiver, you know, hitting that receiver, making that making that play, getting that opportunity. Because, quite frankly, Florida's not going to have many opportunities against LSU, you know, this weekend. And Driscoll really needs to take advantage of them.
But I wrote before the year, it was early in the season when they picked Driscoll, that I thought they were basically choosing to be an average team because he's not the kind of guy that's going to take chances and make plays.
Yeah.
Do things that you're saying they need to do to beat some of the best teams. And I'm with you on that, but I don't know. He's shown at least that he has some potential, that he could maybe either be that guy right now or become that guy somewhere down the road. So, again, that remains to be seen. But another thing we've seen so far this season is this offensive line has been playing better, and we heard all offseason about and into the fall practices about how they were tougher and they were more physical and they were stronger because of the work they did in the weight room. And I didn't really buy into it, but they do look better to this point. Obviously, this weekend will be a bigger test of that than anything. But do you guys believe that the offensive line is significantly improved from a year ago and that that makes a big difference going forward?
I think it's significantly improved. I don't think they're necessarily quite where they need to be yet. They got asked that a lot this week. It will, you've done so far, be good enough going forward. And what they've done at times will be good enough going forward, but what they've done all the time won't be good enough going forward. I think we've seen some times where there were lapses. A lot of the sacks in Texas A&M game, a lot of those were Driscoll's fault for just holding on to the ball too long. But there were a lot of times where there were just missed assignments, guys coming through untouched. And I think they definitely need to be more consistent. The penalties are an obvious one as well. Those at times haven't been much of an issue. At other times they have. But I think they definitely have shown the ability to run block and pass protect a lot better than they did at any point last year. And I think going forward, they definitely just need to, like they said, work on their consistency.
Well, the one thing is, you know, Florida has much better depth this season. That's always been kind of the message from Muschamp and the players, you know, heading into this weekend. And that really hurt them last season. They weren't able to be physical, you know, in spring practice, you know, fall practice, preseason. And now this year they're able to really push themselves and, you know, get after it. And, you know, if you look at their schedule, the only, you know, really good, you know, defense that they faced, who's not even near the caliber of LSU, was Texas A&M, who I believe led the nation, you know, in sacks, you know, last season.
Mm-hmm.
And the offensive line, although it was the second game of the season, you know, they gave up 9 sacks. Whether or not it was on Driscoll or the receivers or the offensive line, I mean, you're looking at their, you know, their resume, you know, this season, and the one team that they really played with a, you know, a history of, you know, sacking the quarterback, you know, got 9 big ones on him, and that's definitely something to keep an eye on heading into this weekend.
If you had to account for Driscoll's happy feet and getting all crazy and kind of putting himself into some trouble against Texas A&M, I don't think you can blame all those on the coverage. I think the offensive line is definitely improved, and this is gonna be the test for him. Obviously, I mean, you don't need me to tell you that, but I mean, the rushing yards have been out the wazoo this season. I know Texas A&M without those sacks, it was approaching 300.
That's a new one.
It was approaching 300 yards rushing, and then against Tennessee, like, just it was getting close to 300 yards rushing again. I mean, if they could pound the ball like that, I mean, Tennessee's defense obviously doesn't look good after that Georgia game last weekend, but. You know, if Florida can continue to pound the ball like that and get those yards, then, I mean, shoot, they're going to be unstoppable. But, I mean, of course, this is LSU where you'll find out if they're actually good.
But, I mean, we'll get into this more later, and I think the rushing game is going to be especially key. But just talking about the pass protection, they've done a good job. And,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it's been impressive, especially considering Chaz Green has been in and out and Kyle Coney's had to play right tackle. And now Xavier Nixon, who was never really that good to begin with, but was the best they had. Now he's kind of rotating at left tackle with Humphreys. Humphreys played the whole second half against Kentucky. So we'll see how that works out. But that they've been able to protect the passer is impressive. And they've also been able to pave the way for Mike Gillisley, who actually looks as good as people thought he might last year when limited time, and then as high as the hopes were coming into this season. I think he's met expectations. Already 5 touchdowns, averaging just more than 100 yards a game. Do you guys buy that he's legitimate and can keep this up the whole way, or is this another product of the playing against bad teams? Because we saw the same thing last year with Dempsey and Rainey going.
I think we should, like, I feel like I should apologize to Mike Gillisley. I mean, I don't think I took him very seriously at the beginning of the year. Like, the whole, like, Gilly Tracker thing, I was like, you know, like, whatever. But now, I mean, he looks great. He's put up the yards per game, obviously. He is an aggressive, physical runner, and he gets first downs, and he provides Florida a spark that Matt Jones and Mac Brown obviously can't provide.
Yeah, I'd say that I think it's a valid concern to say, well, he hasn't really played against great competition yet, but I think the one thing that's not going to change, no matter what defense you're playing, is that he runs north-south, and something Will Muschamp has talked about a lot. He's not going to have negative yards. I think he's a guy that's shown the willingness to just hit the hole if it's there and to aggressively go up between the tackles, and if the offensive line plays better, plays kind of like it has been, if they can create any semblance of the holes they have earlier this season, I think he's shown a willingness to not just to try and dart outside. He's going to go up the middle and try and take advantage of it if it's there, and I think he's capable of doing that.
Before Pincus jumps in, I think the lack of Dempsey Rainey going up the middle and between the tackles was pretty overrated. Like, that wasn't something they were good at, but against Kentucky and Bowling Green, they would have had no problem doing that. Like, they ran between the tackles against some of these terrible teams and were just fine doing that. So just the idea that that's his style for Gillislee, it makes some sense, but it's still, you still have to prove it against the better teams because there won't be as many holes, and then what are you hitting? You're turning into the line.
Well, I think the biggest thing really is you got to give this dude some credit. Gillislee, everyone was clamoring for him last season, and he was Florida's most productive runner against these elite SEC teams. And he was still plugging along. He was still, one of the hardest workers in practice. That was something that everyone really talked about him, heading into the season, was how much of a hard worker he is. And then, the biggest thing, too, is yards after contact. I think with Dempsey Rainey last season, a lot of times you see, one-arm tackles would bring him down. But against a great defensive line like LSU, these guys are going to be, busting up runs all the time, Difference is, is Gillislee going to, be able to make, positive runs and get yards after, contact?
I think the key in the running game this year is, last year Florida was like, oh, we'll just give the ball to Rainey and Dempsey and just see if they can outrun everybody. And, when you face the LSUs, the Alabamas, Georgias and South Carolinas,
those guys are pretty damn fast.
Like, they're fast. You can outrun a Bowling Green linebacker. Like, if you're a collegiate running back at Florida, but you can't do that with just any other team on your schedule.
Now, we talked a little bit about the passing game before, and last season, the whole way through, everybody was talking down on the receivers because they weren't really doing much of anything.
Yeah.
So far this year, I think the group looks a little better, but a lot of it's been inflated by big plays. You think about Frankie Hammond leads the team with 205 yards, but he's had a 80-yard touchdown and a 75-yard touchdown or something like that. I think it was 75 and 50, actually.
Yeah.
But the point is, most of those yards are coming on big plays, and he's not a big play guy. Then you have Jordan Reed, who leads the team with 16 catches, which is a solid total, especially for a tight end through four games, but they still don't have that elite playmaker. And although everybody's looked a little bit better, do you guys buy that as an issue, that they don't have like a go-to receiver or kind of guy that, and not even like having a go-to receiver is key, just a guy good enough to be a go-to receiver?
Well, I mean, I think you got to give Frankie Hammond credit, but also any team that's an explosive offense needs to have more than one receiver that's capable of making a big play. That Quentin Dunbar touchdown catch against Kentucky, that was a good throw by Driscoll, but it wasn't necessarily him having to go out and do much. I think that was someone should have broken that pass up. I think that just the amount of time it was in the air. I think you need to have another receiver besides Frankie Hammond that's capable of making big plays. And like Greg said, he doesn't have much of a track record, and most of his yards have come on two plays. But give him credit for making those plays. But good offenses can't just have one good wide receiver and a tight end that is pretty good at getting open, but still needs to kind of show more consistency.
Well, they've certainly done enough. But whether or not, enough is good for a team like LSU, that's the question right now. I think with the offense that Florida runs, they just need guys to catch the ball when it's thrown to them. They may not get many opportunities, but just take advantage of them and hold on to the football. And I think, last year, they didn't really have a guy, a dependable guy who they can count on, third and five, if they're not running the ball, that thing can throw a quick out and he, get the first down. That's what Florida really needs. It's not so much a guy who's going to get, 10 receptions a game or is going to be solid number one receiver. They just need a collection of guys that just get the job done when asked upon.
Yeah, but I still don't think they have that collection. No, that's why I am so adamant that Florida needs to just run the ball as much as they can because, frankly, Driscoll's averaging 175 against these first four teams. You've got to expect a dip against better competition. Frankie Hammond's not breaking a 50-yard touchdown catch against LSU. I mean, that's just not going to happen.
Right, and I mean, Driscoll's numbers don't necessarily have to dip because I bet they have to throw it more in those games than they had against these other teams.
Yeah.
Especially against Bowling Green when they said they just ran it when it probably wasn't optimal just because they wanted to establish that kind of mentality. But I'm with you there, and just kind of this concern about the receiver group helps transition into what I wanted to do next, which is kind of go into the reasons not to believe if those are the reasons that they, if Gillis Lee in the line and Driscoll are the reasons it could look good, maybe some of the reasons they can't. So, as Jonah Boy said in the beginning, they looked bad against Bowling Green, played a terrible half against A&M, and then had to turn it around in a game against the first-time starter at quarterback. And although he looks good, you should beat the first-time freshman starter at quarterback.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Then you think about the Tennessee game, and this is one where I think everybody kind of got on board, and rightfully so, you would think, because they went on the road and they beat Tennessee by 17. But you needed an 80-yard touchdown from Trey Burton, which has never happened before and will never happen again. 75 yards from Frankie Hammond on, again, like we talked about, he's just not a big play guy. That's not something you should count on week in and week out, although it's already happened twice. And they recovered both of their fumbles, including that one at the goal line by DeBoas very early in the game that some Tennessee guys
That was a big play.
And if they pick that, like at the time you're not thinking about it because it's so early and so much happened from them, but if Tennessee recovers that, you got to think they punch it in from the one, and then you don't know how the game goes from there. So I think regardless of the 17-point spread, that game could have gone either way. And then think about Kentucky. Obviously, we all agree they didn't play – Florida didn't play their best game, but Kentucky was just so bad, and Morgan Newton couldn't complete a pass, and Max Smith was hurt. And so I don't know. I mean, it's tough for me to kind of form a question out of this, but am I the only one that, like, isn't – as on board as everybody else in terms of just what the results say so far? Not even how good the team is, but just how good the results have been.
No, definitely. And I think that some of those have been pretty misleading. I think whenever you look at a Kentucky, a score like that Kentucky game, 38-0, a lot of people are just going to take that at face value. And you got to look deeper than that. And we talked about it. Driscoll's shown flashes of doing well this year, but he was really off for a lot of that game. Like I said, that pass to Dunbar for the touchdown was pretty good. I thought he had more throws that were off target than good throws.
I don't want to interrupt you, but it seems like after the game, he admitted as much that he made some bad reads and he made some misplays. And Muschamp said we had some things down the field and we didn't capitalize. But even like I wrote kind of that it was an uneven performance and up and down. And I think there was a few fans and a few Twitter and all that stuff where people just kind of felt like Driscoll was like Tom Brady, like he just didn't make any mistakes. And I think, I don't know, maybe it's just easy to fall in love when you see he's throwing it up and Kentucky's not doing anything because they're Kentucky. But and you can pick up where you left off. But I
forgot where I left off.
Do you think Tom Brady can't run like that? Overboard.
Come on, Driscoll's better than Tom Brady. Tom Brady can't run like that.
So Joe and Pinkus, just on thoughts on the results so far and whether they're taken out of proportion.
It's a little early. You know, I think the Texas A&M game, you know, that was a great win for the program. You know, people going into that game really didn't know what to expect from the Skaters team, you know, on the road, SEC game. Yeah, and, you know, it was a great environment. You know, the press box was swaying. That was pretty crazy. But, you know, now thinking of, you know, looking back on it, you know, Tennessee, yeah, Florida, you know, probably should have won that game. Kentucky, you should have won. Bowling Green, obviously, you should have won. And, you know, Texas A&M, looking back on it, freshman quarterback, they probably should have won that game too. And, you know, now looking at 4-0, Florida's where they were last season.
Right.
So, you know, I for anyone to say, yes, I'm on board, it's way too early to tell. But the one thing, you know, that you can't take from this is Florida's definitely moving in the right direction, you know, with their program and, you know, this philosophy that they got to be, you know, tougher than the other team. Physical, they're going to run it down your throat, and they're, you know, they're not afraid to say it. They're going to go right after you. And I think that's something fans can certainly look forward to. It's not the most exciting form of play, but, you know, as, you know, Alabama and, you know, LSU, you know, it certainly, you know, they've shown for it to work.
And also the fact that we can sit here and you can say that they should beat Tennessee and Texas A&M,
yeah,
and we're going to nod, says something about where they've
come. I think that's a big positive. That's something we couldn't have said with last season's team.
I think the main issue here is that, in terms of Florida's team, I have the most confidence in their ability to run the ball. And the Gators have a first-year starter at running back, and the offensive line was such an issue last year. And the fact that that is the most confidence-building thing for me personally is an issue in itself, you know.
Yeah, right. So. But I mean, and then moving on a little bit, another one of the sort of downsides is I don't think the defense has been as good as we expected, especially given the level of competition. Teams have been able to run on them, especially you think Texas A&M in the first half. Kentucky even had some good runs on the perimeter before they just were completely out of it because of all the interceptions. And I don't know. It just seemed like after their such a high ranking last year, they are number 17 in total defense so far this season, but just hasn't always looked like they've been able to kind of impose their will and be as strong as they wanted to, even though they've forced five turnovers and they've got the turnover margin thing going, which was such an emphasis last year. Defense just doesn't look as dominant as I expected it to be. How's it stacking up against what you guys thought we would see coming in?
I think that you're right. I think we've seen a few more big plays, particularly early in games. I don't know exactly what to attribute that to, but I think they've definitely been a lot more impressive in second halves. I don't know if you can necessarily just say, oh, well, that's just how it should be. They go in and they make adjustments at halftime, then it's better. For the Texas A&M game, like you mentioned, the big thing they kept saying after the game was, oh, we didn't know he was a mobile quarterback. I don't know how much credence you give to that, but I think that if you don't have a lot of film study to go off for something like that, that could pose a problem. They didn't have any film for the A&M game, but they also were shakier in the first half against both Tennessee, a team they've seen plenty of times, and against Kentucky, a team they've seen plenty of times, and before they clamped down. And I think going forward, they have to be better. Just being okay in the first half and then being good in the second half won't be good enough against South Carolina, Georgia, LSU, and Alabama. So not there, well, if they end up playing Alabama at some point, they're not playing Alabama this year. But I think they definitely just haven't looked as good in the first half. Didn't Bostic miss a tackle against Kentucky?
Right, yeah.
Yeah,
sometimes
I think
there's just a few uncharacteristic things in the game that you wouldn't expect.
So there have been a few just straight-up missed tackles by guys that probably shouldn't be doing that. And I know they got asked a lot about just simply tackling this week. And something you wouldn't think this defense would even really – that shouldn't be a question in the season at this point.
Well, if you look at the past four games, when Florida's needed their defense to step up, they have. You know, that second half against Texas A&M, Florida would not have won if their defense didn't, you know, shut them down.
Right, but they wouldn't have been in that situation if the defense didn't get run all over in the first half.
Well, you know, you got to give them a little bit of credit for stepping up when they needed to. I think, you know,
it's not, well, were they not trying in the first half? They were like, we don't have to worry about this till later. It just seems like, I don't know. It's the timing is convenient, and the adjustments at halftime certainly helped in that game in particular. But it's not like overall they were like, whatever, it's the first half, and then they changed something. They should be playing well the whole time if they can. I'm sure that's what they're aiming
for. With that first half adjustment, that wasn't necessarily an adjustment of anything they were doing differently. That was them not doing what they were told to do in the first place. Will Muschamp said that afterwards, like, yeah, those guys weren't really staying in their gaps. They just kept running up the field and over-pursuing. It wasn't like, oh, they made a schematic adjustment and all of a sudden they started playing it better. That was just on the players to quit leaving their assignments.
Well, I'm not necessarily so sure that, you know, one half of, you know, good defensive football is going to work for Florida, you know, this Saturday. But, you know, when the time comes, you know, I have confidence, you know, in that defense that they'll be able to maybe generate a three and out, or, you know, generate a turnover. Nothing's has shown me to be true otherwise. You know, I think this Florida team has a defense they can count on, you know, late in games. And you know what also has certainly helped that is, you know, an offense that, you know, possesses the ball for, you know, a good portion of the game. And I think that's definitely something to keep an eye on, is can Florida sustain long drives? And if they can, I think you'll see the defense have a pretty good showing against LSU.
So yours sounds like you're buying into the good second halves a lot more than the bad first halves in a lot of these games.
Yeah.
Joe?
It just kind of balances out for me. Florida's defense is vanilla. You know, you're not going to get anything special from it. Most people add to vanilla on Sundays. But, I mean, it's still ice cream. I mean, they're going to be good. They're going to be solid.
It's good
ice
cream.
They're not going to set the world on fire, but they're going to be
adequate. Well, I think people thought they might.
But they're not. I mean, like, how they, like, if a team doesn't get at least 48 turnovers against Morgan Newton, then they're not good.
Right.
You have to have at least 48 picks. But no, like, it's just there's all the talk of we need more turnovers. We need more turnovers. We got to get more turnovers.
Well,
and
maybe this defense doesn't have, you know, those kind of playmakers. Not everyone can have someone like LSU had last year with, you know,
and that's
Tyrann Mathieu, who was a walking turnover machine.
And that's why they're just solid.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that.
I think both this year and last year, the turnovers thing comes down to getting a pass rush. And only have 5 sacks this season. I was surprised when I looked that up last night that it's It's not a very big number for them, and you would think that given the talent they have, even with Powell out, that they would be able to
have more
replace that kind of pass rush presence. And Dan Quinn even said that they haven't been able to replace what Powell brings.
Yeah, and I don't even think Powell brought a lot earlier last year, and I think they've shown flashes of having a pass rush at times, but I knew it hadn't resulted in many sacks. But like you saw at the second half of the Tennessee game, Laurente McCray was bringing in a lot, and he got a lot of credit for after that. But for the most part, they haven't really generated that. I wasn't surprised, though. I wasn't expecting the I knew it would help for them to be able to move Sharif Floyd inside and Dominique Easley on the outside. And after the first game, Easley generated a little bit more pressure. But they don't have a whole lot of defensive line depth. I still don't think they do. They were able to put McCray in there once Powell went down. They got Easley relying on Bullard and Foward as freshmen. They've shown flashes, but they haven't. I didn't think they had a guy on the roster that had proven he could be a consistent threat coming off the edge, and I don't think that's really still come to fruition.
Yeah, you know what? My question is, wasn't Dominique Easley and Sharif Floyd, those guys coming in, weren't they supposed to be the elite pass rushers that Florida needed?
Yeah.
And we haven't seen it in Powell too. Floyd's looked good. He's certainly a player who plays on the inside, so there's more than just getting after the quarterback, but Powell and Easley, man, what's going on? And when was the last time Florida had a premier pass rusher? I think maybe Carlos Dunlap in 2009. He had something like 6-9 sacks. Florida, in order for their defense to take the next step, they need that elite pass rusher, because when they get that elite pass rusher, perhaps you won't see one half ball games where they're throw up a dud, the first half. I think with an elite pass rusher, it'll make the other players on the defense much, much better.
I think the alarming comment I heard this week was when Dan Quinn said, we need to do a better job of one-on-one matchups. And I was like, these guys, they're all upperclassmen. If they are not winning one-on-one matchups against the first four opponents, how are they going to win one-on-one matchups against LSU, against, they don't play Alabama, why do I always say that, against Georgia, against South Carolina? If you can't win a one-on-one matchup against Kentucky, then you're not going to win a one-on-one matchup against anybody.
Right.
And that shouldn't be a problem for guys like Easley and McCray, who came in as 4- and 5-star recruits, who are upperclassmen.
Right.
It's either bad coaching or they're busts, one or the other.
I mean, I think McCray's been solid. I don't know.
Yeah, he's been good. He's certainly someone that they can count on.
I mean,
a pleasant surprise.
He's their best pass rusher.
Yeah.
He's their best pass rusher, but, I mean, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I mean the 5 sacks just isn't very.
That's not going to get it done.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, one thing Josh touched on a little bit is the guys, the depth, and that's something we've heard a lot about. Bullard and Fowler have looked good. Earl and Leonora both stepped up a little bit. Among other guys, Damian Jacobs is one of the guys that's been rotating in, JUCO transfer new this year. So, I mean, what do you guys make of the defensive line depth? I think Josh seemed to kind of sell them short, but I think it is an improvement over last year.
I think it's an improvement, but I think they have – the thing is that they're fresher because they have more guys they feel are good enough that can be on the field. I think that's one of the things, that they don't feel like these guys are practicing well enough. They're not going to see game time. So I think that's helped them to have more guys that they can rotate in and out, and maybe that's helped them be a little bit more relentless as the game goes on. So I think in a way, yes, their depth has improved in that they have more guys that they feel are worthy of playing time, but I don't think they have a lot of guys that are dominant once they come in, if that makes any sense.
I think the depth's significant. These guys, like these high-profile recruits that come in, they aren't doing much, but I feel like they have more opportunities to do things when you have guys like Damian Jacobs and, I mean, Leonor had 4 tackles against Kentucky, but not that impressive to me. But, like, when you have guys that can come in, it keeps the better guys fresher, and I don't know, maybe then they'll live up to their potential if they're only playing, like, 2/3 of what they were playing last year.
Well, here's something to keep in mind. Did Florida have depth issues, along the defensive line when they went 4-0 last season? I mean, we gotta see how this team's gonna perform against, an elite SEC team like LSU. Perhaps the same problems that they had last year, come to light, on Saturday. But one thing to keep in mind though is Florida. It appears that Florida finally has an offense that can, help its defense. I don't think it can be said enough, the fact that Florida has shown to be able to sustain you know, longer drives and have a consistent running game and take time off the clock and keep those guys, you know, fresh along the defensive line. You know, I think that's one of the biggest improvements, you know, of this season, you know, more than anything else that, you know, the defense has done themselves.
Well, I'm with you a little bit in that we have to wait and see how the depth performs in the better games, but at the same time, just looking at the sheer number of bodies that they feel comfortable putting out there, again, early last season, they weren't putting in as many of the terrible players until it was way out of hand, and so we're already seeing that even second or third series, a lot of time, they'll just put out, like, Bullard, Fowler, Jacobs, and Orr, and just, like, a whole different front four of the second-team unit there. So that's something that they can do this year that they didn't do last year, and whether it's because it keeps the guys fresh or whether it's because it just gives them more options to work with and more versatile skill sets, maybe for whatever reason, that's something that they should expect to help them. Now, kind of ready to move on and start previewing this LSU matchup. Top 10 game here, number 4 LSU, number 10 Florida. LSU is obviously a talented team. Think about how good they were last year, but 2 weeks ago, they beat Auburn 12-10, and then last week they beat Towson 38-22 and were trailing in the second quarter. Just been playing sloppy football overall. 5 fumbles last week. How much do you guys buy into maybe LSU's just not as good as they were last year, and they're not the kind of team that should be feared as much as they were last season?
I don't think they're as good. The one game I got to watch a lot of them, it was that Auburn game. I still think their defense is pretty good. Even without Matthew, I think they are capable. Like we're talking about the Gators. The Gators need to get that pass rush, and that'll make everyone else better. And I think they have that. They have the guys who can rush the passer, and that kind of oils the rest of the machine. I think their defense is fine. On offense, I was not very impressed with Mettenberger. That Auburn game was the first time I'd really gotten to see him play a lot, and he just wasn't making the throws that you would have thought with the kind of hype that was around him coming into the season. I thought he even resembled a little bit of like what the Florida freshman quarterbacks looked like last year. He looked like he was just timid, wasn't wanting to make any big throws, or maybe I should say more like Jeff Driscoll last year. We've seen Driscoll improve and want to be able to do more in the passing attack this year. I thought Mettenberger just looked timid.
Maybe it was just a ploy. Maybe they were just acting that way on purpose. No, I mean, Towson puts on their pants the same way LSU does. LSU is going to be a power running team. It doesn't matter that Mettenberger is.
Who's that quarterback team. Or how they play?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's just their mentality. And Mettenberger is, he's a talented guy, no doubt, but he's just hasn't done much this season. And they're going to rely on that power running game. The problem is that they're really nicked up in the running game. I mean, Spencer Ware's got a shoulder injury.
Yeah.
J.C. Copeland's got a leg, as Mike Champ would say.
Isn't Alfred Blue out?
Yeah, Alfred Blue.
He was their starting running back the first 3 games.
Alfred Blue's got a stinger on
Hilliard was the guy getting most of the carries.
Yeah,
Hilliard is the guy they're relying on. And last year against Florida, he had 1 carry for 5 yards. So I'm not sure.
Four of those guys are the same. Like, it doesn't matter. They could lose 2 of them, and they still have 2. Yeah.
They're all just puzzle pieces.
No, they're all the same guy. You don't need all 4 of them to put it together.
What happens if Kevin Hilliard gets injured in the first play?
Then they put in, who are the other 2? Not Blue.
Spencer Ware?
Spencer Ware. Yeah. Just give him the same thing.
And Copeland's a fullback, though.
Right, there's 4 guys, though. I'm forgetting the 4th one.
I'm just saying
one of you guys with the laptop that's not running GarageBand can pull it up. There's
Michael
just,
Ford.
Yes, he's fine. They're all the same player. Yeah. All weigh like,
he could have made that name up.
They all weigh like 245, and they all are fast, and they're all big. It doesn't matter.
But, I mean, then the offensive line's just a problem, too, because, I mean, they're starting like that Vader Alexander as a freshman, because, like, they have that, I mean, I don't know.
Right, but that guy's huge. Like, he's ready to go.
I mean, I'm just saying LSU is probably most likely has a better running game attack, whatever, than Florida does, but they're banged up in the running game.
Well,
and
we're breaking it down by that. What I just wanted to hear from you guys is if you're looking at the 5 fumbles and the general playing close against bad teams and thinking that that's giving you, in general, the thought that LSU isn't that good.
Just saying their bread and butter isn't good, and they haven't shown anything else otherwise on the offensive side of the ball, so I think they're possibly in trouble.
My answer to that is one word. No. You know, LSU, I think, is certainly someone who's, you know, forced to be reckoned with in the SEC. Florida's going to find that out the hard way on Saturday. You know, this really is this game for Florida can be viewed, you know, 2 ways. You know, 1, you know, is this, you know, measuring stick game? Are they, you know, one of the elite, you know, teams in the conference. And also, you know, I think how they should look at it is, you know, this is damn good preparation for, you know, Georgia and South Carolina, two very important games that Florida really has to win in order to, you know, make a name for themselves in the SEC East and maybe go to Atlanta. You know, coming into the season, did anyone think Florida has a chance against LSU? Answer to that is probably no. So, you know, Florida's got to put on those realistic glasses and really take a look in the mirror and kind of, you know, play a solid football game. But in reality, you know, do they have as much talent as LSU? Probably not, and they probably shouldn't win this game.
I'm not sure. I'm not exactly sure exactly what you're saying your stance was on that. Then, if you're saying it shouldn't be a game they're expecting to, you're saying it should be a good preparation game going forward.
Well, obviously the team's not viewing it as that way, but people on the outside, fans.
You don't think they should be viewing it as a game they can win?
No, obviously the players on the team view it as a game as a game that they could win. For us, you know, right now, I don't, you know, Florida isn't really supposed to, you know, they're a top 10 team. You know, they came into the season, you know, fringe top 25 team. Everyone said, you know, 6-6, no playmakers on offense. And all of a sudden, after a couple big plays, Florida, 2-point underdog, you know, 3.5-point underdog against, you know, LSU, a team that was, you know, number one for a lot of last season. You know, I'm not necessarily so certain that, you know, that I'm buying Florida completely and buying the fact that LSU is having, you know, such a down year.
No, I mean, I think they are. I don't think you can say they're having a down year yet when they haven't lost a game, but I think they've certainly shown enough glimpses. They struggled enough that I think it's not unrealistic for the Gators to pull them off an upset. I do think Florida's going to struggle, though. I think their offense is going to, like you said, they've just pulled off a couple big plays, and everyone thinks they're good to go. And those big plays aren't going to come as easily against LSU. They're going to have to find different ways to kind of swing the momentum of games. And I think against LSU, it's not necessarily going to be that easy. But I think LSU struggled, too. I think the Gators have a good chance to come in there and make things happen. I think it's going to be a very low-scoring game. I think it's going to look a lot like that Auburn game did. I think both teams are going to probably struggle on offense because, like you said, LSU is not healthy in the run game. And Florida just hasn't faced a team of this caliber. I think either team can expect to win a close game, low-scoring game.
I think the way you need to look at it, though, is, I mean, just at the end, I mean, at the end of the day, LSU's down years. They're 9-3. They're 10-2. I mean, they're always going to be good. They're always going to be a challenge. And quit gesturing at me, people. I'm going to make my point. Damn it.
Be louder, bro.
Yeah. So, anyway, basically, LSU, when they're bad, they're good. They're not playing in the TaxSlayer.com Gator Bowl. Okay, like their down year is the Outback Bowl or the Capital One Bowl. I'm just saying, I feel like Florida is well clipped to compete against LSU this weekend, but LSU certainly isn't bad.
And I think for me the biggest thing is I think we're going to see LSU's best game this weekend. And I know earlier in the year they had a couple blowouts, but compared to the last 2 weeks, I think, you know, coming into the Swamp, having to face a top 10 team, they're going to be a different team than what we saw when they struggled against Towson and Auburn. They're just going to like want it more.
It's a big game. I mean, it's a really big game for LSU. When was the last time you've heard people questioning whether or not LSU is, you know, who we thought they were, you know, beginning of the year? Yeah, right. I mean, you know, this is a big game. This is a big, you know, show me game for LSU. You know, show me that you guys are, you know, supposed to be, you know, top five, top three team in the country. Because, quite frankly, yeah, they probably haven't shown it, you know, up to this point.
Right, right. And, I mean, the idea that they're different from last year because they're not as good is one thing. But the idea that they're different from last year because they have different pieces, I think, is very legitimate. And Josh touched on Mettenberger a little bit. So far this year, just over 1,000 passing yards, completing 65%, 6 touchdowns, 2 picks. Hasn't been great, but I think they've all said, and Muschamp admitted as much, just talking about his arm talent, that he brings a dimension to the offense that they didn't have last year, and there was a lot of quarterback run with Jefferson, and Jarrett Lee was in and out, and just overall it's a different look because of Mettenberger. And I don't know, I mean, compared to, just talk a little bit about kind of Florida's coverage matchups and how they are going to match up with a guy who can stretch the field when they need everybody they can in the box at the same time.
The thing is with Florida's coverage is I think there's a bunch of talented guys back there, but arguably the most talented guy, Marcus Roberson, always seems to run into trouble when people get on the field, especially against Tennessee, last year and this year. Pass interference, just general confusion. So I think it's just kind of a wild card in this case.
No, I agree. I think Roberson's really had his struggles. That was something that got talked about a lot after the Tennessee game. They had trouble last year in the Tennessee game with the penalties, and they did again this year. And I think they needed someone else to step up. I think our expectations for Lucius Purifoy are probably a little bit unrealistically high coming into the year, considering he's a very impressive physical specimen, but he didn't really do much last year in coverage. And Jalen Watkins has had his moments, but like, I don't want to give him too much credit for the thing against Kentucky, because we've already killed Morgan Newton enough, but the fact is he's just not very good. I think, like you said, they have a lot of talented guys, but got to kind of see him put it all together. Matt Elam's good. Josh Evans up and down also. So I think they definitely need to but I don't think this is the worst possible matchup for them to have either. I don't think, like we've talked about, LSU's not going to kill you in the run game. I think the fact that they have the threat of a passing game, that is different from years past, but even with the questions in the secondary, I don't think it's overly concerning, because LSU hasn't necessarily shown they're going to kill teams through the air.
Well, you know, the key to this ball game is going to be, you know, pass offense and pass defense, because both teams know.
You think, really?
Yeah, I do, because both teams, I think both defenses are going to shut down, you know, the rushing attacks. You know, they know that, you know, both teams run the football, they like to run it, and they're going to key in on that. But, you know, can LSU pass the football? If they can, you know, Florida's going to have some trouble, because, you know, you got to account for three solid running backs and, you know, a real passing attack. You know, Florida hasn't had to deal with that, you know, this season. You know, what if, you know, Driscoll, you know, Gillislee, you know, if Driscoll can certainly pass the football in LSU, that's going to help out the running game. And, you know, who can do, you know, which team can, you know, pass the football and kind of do what they don't necessarily do best, I think is going to, you know, go a long way.
If it comes down to the passing game, then I like Florida's chances, because I feel like that Driscoll right now is playing better quarterback than Mettenberger.
Well,
I don't know if we've seen enough either to really call. I think that could go either way. But, I mean, what Pincus is saying transitions into one thing I wanted to talk about, which is the most important position group debate. We have the poll up on our website, and it's which unit is going to be most important if Florida's going to pull the upset. And to me, it comes down to the rushing offense and the rushing defense, just because both teams want to establish themselves physically. And I know I'm picking two, but both teams want to establish themselves physically and wear the other guy down. And if they can't do that, then that's going to give a huge advantage to whichever side can. I think you just look at the way Florida's offense is built, like we've been talking about this whole show, is they want to be able to run the ball and control the clock. And if LSU is going to take them out of that and they're going to force a couple three and outs, then LSU is going to be the team controlling the clock and wearing Florida down. Even with the improved depth, that could be a factor. And, again, we're talking about both quarterbacks unproven, really, against tough competition. So I think it just comes down to that side of it. But which unit do you guys see being the most important?
I'd say I'm probably going to be the offensive line, because I think the rushing attack will be the key to the Gators winning. Like I said, I know you kind of said maybe I was giving him too much credit considering the competition Gillislee's played against, but I think if they open up the holes that he requires, then I think that'll be the key to the Gators' success. That'll give Driscoll a little bit more opportunity if they have to give more attention to the run game. I think that'll just really open everything up for the offense. I think that's a tall order, though. Not that I think they're going to do it, but I think that is the most important thing for the Gators. If the offensive line can block Mingo, can block Montgomery, can block Johnson, I think the Gators will have a successful day, but I don't necessarily think that's going to happen, but I think that's the biggest thing for them.
Well, if you look at the poll results, the people said run offense for 39% and, you know, run defense for 42%. You know,
so Greg was right.
Yeah. Well, we'll see about that. But my thing is, you know, both teams aren't going to win just by running the football. You know, which quarterback makes that big throw late in the game? You know, that's, you know, you can't say who's going to do it now, but, you know, in order for one of these teams to win, their quarterback has to make the plays at the end of the game.
Well, I mean, if one of the teams establishes themselves as just being the better run team,
it might not even be that close.
It's not going to come down to that.
Yeah.
Well, I think both teams are going to be physical.
And why just one throw?
What?
Why just one throw?
It's going to be multiple throws.
Multiple big throws. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, I think both teams are solid running teams. Both teams can certainly, you know, defend the run. You know, whether or not Florida is as good at LSU doing that remains to be seen. But I'm more concerned with which quarterback's going to, you know, make those plays necessary for the team to win. Because I do think it's going to be a close ball game. You know, Florida, knowing, you know, Will Muschamp from what he's saying, you know, they'd be fine with, you know, a 6-3 ball game or something that's really close, maybe a 12-10 going into the, you know, the fourth quarter. That's something that Florida would love to have because you got the home crowd, and Florida's been in that situation before. So I think, you know, Florida's really planning for close ball game. They're going to win in the end. In order for that to happen, they got to have, you know, Driscoll to, you know, step up and make, you know, a lot of throws that perhaps, you know, we haven't seen this year.
You just got to put on your realistic glasses.
Yeah, man. Ugly, man. Always wearing those realistic glasses.
They're going to put on their pants the same way as LSU.
Yeah, they do.
You have a cliche you want to throw in there, Greg?
No, I'm good. Joe, what's your most important unit to look at this weekend?
Oh, I mean, it's just going to be the line of scrimmage, obviously, especially offensively for Florida. Yeah, as Josh said, the offensive line and the running game. I mean, like, that's what I wrote my column about, and that's where I think if Florida can control things on the offensive side of the ball running it, then they can certainly win.
Do we think that they can control the line of scrimmage, or certainly – you know, not, you know, let LSU dominate?
Well, you look at, you know, the two ends that LSU has. Obviously, two guys that could be top 10 picks. Barkevious Mingo, great name, 240-pound speed rusher. Sam Montgomery, 260 pounds. Not the biggest guys. And then you look at the tackles. Those aren't – they're fringe 300-pounders, also not just a huge unit up front. And I think when you talk about Florida with their physicality and what they've wanted to establish, people have kind of been playing it up as a test for their ability to do that. I think it's more a problem if they can't, just because this isn't one of the bigger defensive lines that they'll face.
Yeah, I think, like you said, they're undersized. It's going to be – those are undersized defensive ends that are pass rush specialists. They're easier to take out of the run game than other kinds. And like I said, I think the Gators are going to have – they're going to have some trouble throwing the ball. It's been a long week for me, but now I'm remembering what I wrote my column about too. It's going to be tough if Driscoll comes right out and they're going to come out throwing. And they haven't done that all season, so I don't expect them to, but – I think it's going to be hard to expect to get a lot of big plays out of the passing game. Their best bet is going to be in try and run it up their throat because these are guys that they're not like big, like you said, they're fringe 300-pounders. They're not like these guys that are just massive and just going to be able to sit there and clog holes just by their presence. You have the opportunity to possibly push them around.
Yeah, and then you look at the air side of the ball, LSU's power running game. They had to contend with Sharif Floyd and Omar Hunter and those guys who are, you know, big dudes, you know, so... I mean, I feel like Florida has a bit of a, I wouldn't say easy, but they have less of a burden if they want to do the whole running it down your throat strategy.
And they absolutely have to, because if you can't establish something like that to slow Mingo and Montgomery down, it's going to be a long day for Driscoll. I mean, they've talked about some things like changing his launch point and moving him around in the pocket and doing some sprint out sort of things, but that alone is not going to be enough to kind of keep those guys off of him, because for the first time that he's faced, he's going against linemen who are as fast and as good as
can. Yeah, they might better run them down.
So, all right, I mean, we've covered it pretty in-depth. I think it's time to go to kind of score predictions and Gator guarantees. And I've got LSU winning 27-13. I just think we're going to find out how good LSU is. They're going to come out and play their best game. And we're going to find out that maybe we went a little too in on Florida too quickly. And there's obviously a good chance that Florida comes out and pulls the upset. But to me, I think if they do, it'll have a lot to do with LSU not playing their best game and not playing at their peak, because I just think LSU at their best, which you would hope they would be for a game the magnitude of Saturday's, would come out and really have their way with Florida a little bit. So I think a lot of that's going to be shown on the defensive side, which is why my Gator guarantee is that Florida will be under 250 yards of total offense. They've averaged 400 so far this year. So going out on a little bit of a limb there, but I just don't think between Between Driscoll getting run down by these, but if Brantley was here, then that would be pretty easy. between Driscoll getting chased down by the more athletic ends and the more athletic line, and the running game having to go up against some legitimate forces on the inside that could be, even with the size advantage, I think LSU will definitely find a way to shut them down for the most part. So, Josh, what's yours?
I'm going to say 17-10 LSU. I don't think either team scores 20 points. I think both offenses will struggle, but I think Gators are just really going to struggle in the passing game. And I think LSU, even though as iffy as their passing game has been, as banged up as I say they're in their own game, I just think I think they'll be able to score enough points to beat Florida, because I think Florida's going to struggle offensively. And I guess mine's a little close to you. I was going to say for my Gator guarantee that Jeff Driscoll throws for less than 130 yards.
Mm. Yeah, that's solid.
Well, I'm saying 20-13 LSU. It's going to be a close game. You know, Florida's going to be in it until, you know, maybe midway through the third into the fourth quarter. You know, both teams are going to be able to perhaps run the football a little bit, but the difference is going to be, you know, Mettenberger. He's averaging 200 yards a game. He's one of the – he's definitely, you know, shown more of an ability to throw the football than Jeff Driscoll this season. And my Gator guarantee is he gets to 200 yards passing and carries LSU to the victory. Maybe, you know
– the bold prediction is an yes. average game for Zach
Mettenberger. Well, against this Florida defense, you know – everyone's saying, you know, well, this Florida defense is, you know, pretty good. You know, is Mettenberger the real deal? Well, I think he's going to make the plays in later in the game that LSU needs to win. Perhaps, you know, Odell Beckham Jr. Mettenberger connection to win it. We'll see.
Okay, that works.
Yeah.
All right, I just poured myself a nice tall glass of Kool-Aid, and I'm going to be that guy and predict a Florida victory. It's going to be 16-9.
What's wrong with you?
I don't know, man. It's been kind of a weird morning, and my Gator guarantee is that Mike Gillisley will hit triple digits on the rushing yards.
We have another guy just picking a dude to do his average. Thanks. Awesome work out of you guys. That's all you got. You're picking an upset, and that's all you got?
Yeah, Gillisley's going to run for 100 yards. Plus,
they're going to beat LSU when Gillisley rushes for 100 yards.
Well, I think that's the zaniest thing that's been said here.
So they're going to do something that they've done four times this year already, win a game. And Mike Gillisley's going to do something he's already done three times.
Against an LSU defense, 100 yards rushing, that's damn good.
Seriously. If Florida's going to win and Gillisley's going to have 100 yards, that's going to work. They don't need to be better than that.
Yeah, I wrote earlier this week, I think they need at least 150 from him like he got against Bowling Green.
To beat LSU, you think 100 yards from Gillisley gets it done?
I think.
I'm just saying, man, Mac Brown and Matt. Okay, fine.
Well, no, I just don't understand how they're going to win this game if Gillisley's only rushing for 100 yards.
The team that wins is going to be, you know.
I didn't say 100 on the dot.
Who does?
Okay, well, then give me a good number.
125.
That's probably fair.
That's a good number. Well, you know, my thing is.
On three carries.
What? Both teams run the football.
Watch out for his workload.
Both teams run the football. You know, passing necessarily isn't their strongest suit. Who does that better? You know, that I think it's going to be the, you know, lasting, you know, impression, you know, from this game.
Exactly. All right. Well, that wraps up the show for this week. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Alligator Sports, and you can follow me on Twitter at Greg Luca. You can follow Josh
at Josh Chernovoy, and you can hear Pincus and I tonight on the radio on ESPN Radio 8900 in Gainesville.
Nobody's going to listen to it before.
No. What time? What time? Tell them what time.
Nobody's going to listen to it before then. Pincus, you're on Twitter.
Don't listen to cheap seats. Pincus is on.
I'm on the Twitter at Pincus _ Adam.
And Joe, you are where?
At Joe _ Morgan.
You can also find us on Facebook.com/ Alligator Podcast. You can subscribe on iTunes. As always, pick up a copy of the paper. Joe, what?
You can find me tonight at Mother's cheering on the Braves in the wild card game.
Really?
Yeah. Come on out.
Like he interrupted me talking about the show closing to make sure we got that in there. So glad we forced
go
it.
Go Chipper.
Woo! All right. I mean, I got nothing else. We will hopefully be back early next week to do an LSU recap. And at some point, we'll be in there to preview the Vanderbilt game. It's going to be it's another road trip week, so we're going to have to figure something out. But, Sure. Oh, you got more?
Yeah. You want me to send this out with a tomahawk chop? Like a Braves one. I'm unbiased.
No, we should just sing Orioles Magic, and that'll be the end of the show. Yeah, so that's about it. If Joe has no more interruptions, then thank you for listening.
Yeah, go Braves.